So This Is Christmas by Rainbow Obsidian, read by Daisy Diversions. Fandom is Carry On, the Simon Snow series by Rainbow Rowell. The rating is teen and up, and no archive warnings apply. The pairing is Baz/Simon. Chapter 1, Prologue. Simon. Every year I tell myself, next year will be different. I will be different. I'll be organized. I'll start early. I'll not get flustered. I'll not need cider. I'll surprise myself with how capable I am. And every year, suddenly December 23rd, and I haven't organized shit. I battle the crowds of shoppers, throwing my body around like a kid on a battlefield, and feeling just as out of place among everyone else who looks like they know what the fuck they're doing. Once I've got what I need, and I'm thoroughly regretting every life choice that has led me to the shops, I stop by the off license on my way home for some liquid galvanization, and get to work. I don't think I've seen the end of December 23rd sober for 10 years. Last year was different, though. Not the disorganized bit. That was worse than ever. Have you ever gone shopping on Christmas Eve? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Last year, I was so last minute that everything was already on sale for Boxing Day. So in a moment of pure genius, I bought enough for this year as well, and cheaper than ever before. I was tempted to go hard and tackle both years, so this year I could sit back and think about how I'd gotten my life sorted. But given how fucking disorganized I was, my last-minute works better under a looming deadline superpower was barely enough to get me finished in time. And by the time I'd burned through all that adrenaline and the potential crisis had been averted, I'd run out of spoons, and to even think about next year, let alone get a start on it. That's a lot of pressure on my poor adrenal system for a couple pairs of fucking Christmas pajamas. Chapter 2, Snowbody's Perfect. Author's Notes. Best thing about living so far in the future is that even though I accidentally missed the Tuesday posting window in Australia, it's definitely still Tuesday somewhere. Simon. It's 2 days before Christmas and I'm ready to sew. I had a couple of ciders with lunch and I've gotten a third within reach where I'm set up in my kitchen. The pajama pattern is spread out in front of me as I trace the sizes I need onto baking paper. And even after all these years, I'm still not sure if that's how you're supposed to do it. But it works for me. It means that if I make a mistake, I haven't cut the actual pattern, and I can make multiple sizes with one packet, multiple years in a row, which I have done now for 10 years. Bloody hell, I can't believe I've been doing this for 10 years. I started when I was 22 and had just met Ray's and Garth for the first time. They were in their late teens then. They had met each other bouncing around the foster system and were ultimately placed at a group home, barely a more palatable name than orphanage, to wait out their time before they aged out of the system. Christmas is always the worst in care, especially when you get older. Church groups and charities fill their community service quota by bringing gifts, but they're always for the little ones. It doesn't stop the dickhead older kids trying to get their hands on things, though. The first year I was selected for the home manager, Davy, to play Father Christmas and hand out parcels to the kids, they started calling me the Chosen One. And I was stuck with the nickname for 3 solid years after that. Not even throwing a punch at the biggest guy got me out of Santa duty. I still had to do it, and they called me the worst Chosen One to ever be chosen. I'd been at the home for my whole life, and by the time I turned 18, I was a hot mess. Probably still am, honestly, but in a less destructive way, mostly. I kept running on survival mode for several years after, always looking over my shoulder, always waiting for the next threat, always on edge and going off at anyone who looked at me sideways before they could get at me first. In my last year, I was befriended by Penny, the daughter of one of the senior support workers. And once she decided we were friends, she barely left my side. We lost contact after that, despite her best intentions. I was desperate for independence and freedom, though that really just looked like me being a nuisance, drinking too much and couch surfing between a few shady friends. She eventually caught up with me 10 years ago. I asked her how, and she reckoned she cast a tracking spell on me. I don't believe in magic, but fuck if she wasn't convincing. Told me her mom had a plan for me and all, but forced me to agree. She made me move into the spare room at her place and threatened to hex me if I went back to drinking too much. We really love Penny, but fucking hell, she's scary when she wants to be. Turns out her mom, Mrs. B, was promoted to manager at the group home when Davy skipped town, and she was working hard to turn the facility around. It also turned out that her plan for me was to link me with a couple of the teens from the home so that they could hang out during the day for the week leading up to Christmas. It's the Christmas Connection Program, Penny explained that year. Don't roll your eyes, Simon. The working title was You'll Never Walk Alone, but Mom told the board they could find a new name or a new manager, and this is the best they could come up with. Honestly, I can imagine Mrs. B saying exactly that. She is nice, I guess, but a pit bull is nice. Smart, kind of cute, but also sort of scary. Apples and trees, I guess. The program was something about mentorship and setting a good example. I have no idea why they chose me. And honestly, I thought I'd be shit at it. What did I have to offer? I'd been out of care for 4 years and still had no idea how to function as a meaningful member of society. But Penn wouldn't let me say no. So off I went, and it turns out me, Garth, and Raze had loads of fun. After 3 days, I knew I'd do it every year if I could. I went to Penn's house the third night and couldn't stop talking about it. I was walking around her sitting room, waving my hands around, telling her how great the program was, going on about how I wished I'd had something like that when I was younger. wishing I'd known a kinda almost adult grown-up who was invested in me and prioritized my well-being. I know, Simon, she interrupted at one point. You're talking at me like I wasn't the one who set you up for this. Fair point. But also, I hadn't felt enthusiastic about anything for so long. And I really felt like I'd made a positive connection with Rhea and Garth. She might have set me up in the program, but I'm the one who did the hard work. And I wanted to give them the best Christmas ever. I'd seen people posting on Instagram about this adorable little elf that you move around the house and wanted to do that. But apparently the fact that it was already December 19th and they're teenagers, see, made it a terrible idea. I was pacing back and forth in her kitchen, getting in everyone's way. Pen was decorating cookies. One of her siblings had a sewing machine set up on the kitchen table. Mrs. B was trying to find a document amongst the random piles of paper that seemed to grow like weeds all over their house. And Mr. B was vacuuming between all of us. A crackling Christmas album was playing on their old record player. And somewhere in the house, a kid was attempting to play a violin. I'd been going on about how much I wished I had something tangible to give Rhea and Garth as a memento of our week, when sewing machine Bruntz looked up and said, "Why don't you make them some Christmas pajamas?" And so I did, with loads of help and a lot of naive enthusiasm and probably not enough gusset reinforcement. They loved them. I only did Christmas connections for 2 years because I went off to study social work after that, and it was too hard in university. But I've been making Christmas pajamas for Reyes and Garth ever since. I'll admit, I've been feeling pretty cocky about not having to go fabric shopping this year. But having it on hand hasn't exactly motivated me to start early like I thought it might. If anything, I kind of forgot about sewing altogether. As if a couple of meters of fabric will magically transform into pajama shorts without my intervention. Everything just feels so hard at the moment. The rational part of my brain knows that I am putting too much pressure on myself, but the louder, more convincing part of my brain is telling me that I should be finished by now. I don't know if it's me or a byproduct of getting older, but Christmas seems to get harder every year. Back in my 20s, after my 2 years doing Christmas connections, I grew to love Christmas so much. I moved back to Watford after uni and scored an awesome job as one of the three social workers at a local youth center. I fulfilled my dream and bought an elf on the shelf, and every night in December before I left work, I moved it somewhere new, setting up elaborate shenanigans for the mischief-loving kids who came in. I made a giant advent calendar and developed themed activities for each day. I knew what it would have meant to have even one gift, let alone a host of Christmas traditions, when I was a kid. And I threw all my energy into creating something magical for the kids in our service. I thought about being a proper adult now. the having a sense of purpose, that the means to support that purpose would keep the spirit of Christmas alive. Until now, every November 30th rolled around and I realized I had to do December all over again. I get so overwhelmed and so resentful of past Simon for starting all these fucking traditions that I no longer give a shit about and still have to do because the kids love them. I love that I've given them something to look forward to, but I hate that I have to be the one to keep on giving. The last few years felt like I have been systemically pouring all of me into a giant hole and running out of me to give. Hot tip for anyone considering falling down the rabbit hole of a new special interest. If the special interest will require you to keep it up long after you've broken up with it, step away before you begin. And if you're naive enough to think you'll be fine, or that this is a special interest that will simmer for years like a master broth rather than burn out like a splash of alcohol in a hot pan, that's okay. But have some self-control for fuck's sake. Choose one interest at a time. You cannot maintain a Christmas tradition of daily Advent calendar activities. The stupid fucking elf and making Christmas pajamas year after year without resenting all elements and hating yourself for not doing enough, not caring enough, not being enough. Rather, you can, but you'll end up wrung dry, still having to pretend it's the most magical time of the year, even though, from where you're standing, there's fuck all magic left. It takes a burnt out inner monologue and a further 30 seconds of self-loathing to realize I don't have enough fabric for 2 pairs of pants. No matter how many times I lay the pattern pieces on the fabric, I cannot make them fit twice. If I could turn the pieces sideways, I'd probably be good. But something fabric grain, and also there's the tiny fact that the fabric is covered in little elves with Will Ferrell's face and look. I might be a near enough is good enough kind of once a year sewer, but even I know that sideways elves are going to look shit. Fucking hell. Chapter 3. Snow Time Like the Present. Simon. Did I mention fuck? The problem with being a near enough is good enough once a year sewer is that each year you almost have to start fresh with both ability and confidence. Each year, by the time the pajama making saga, I'm once again pretty confident. But aside from knowing that everything will probably work out in the wash if I just persevere, I have to refresh so much basic skills along the way. The problem with buying discounted fabric at the end of the season is that the reason it's usually discounted is because it's the end of a bolt. The problem with being a near enough is good enough once a year sewer, who also buys discounted fabric, is that you think it's completely reasonable to hold up a length of fabric, visualize a pair of pants against it, and decide it's totally enough material for what you need. It's me. Hi. I'm the problem. It's me. I push away from my makeshift sewing table, make a mental calculation of how much I had to drink, and decide that while I'm probably safe to dry to Hobbycraft, I'm not confident I'd be legal. I cut Midnight's mid-track. The return arm is a bit dodgy, and I can't risk scratching Taylor up. Grab my keys and hop about, trying to shove my feet in my shoes without undoing them first. I'm out the door and halfway down the stairs when I curse and head back inside for my coat and wallet. I'm doing well. I have trouble with basic adulting when I'm anxious, and when I've had a few, and on days that end with a Y. Looks like my Swiss cheese holes are lining up tonight. It's bloody freezing outside. My hands are colder than a witch's tit, and I regret not bringing the one glove that I could find. I shove my hands deep in my pockets and decide to jog to the store to try to warm up a bit. 1 minute, I'm rounding the corner just by the entrance, and the next, I've gone arse over, and there's cold water seeping through the fabric of my joggers. I stand up and dust myself off, absolutely not doing that thing where you surreptitiously look around to assess the pride damage. On the upside, my stumble appears to have gone unnoticed. On the downside, my hip's a bit tender and a lot wet, and I've cracked my phone screen again. Bah humbug. Thankfully, there's not too much last-minute shoppers tonight. I guess all of the other Christmas crafting people get their projects done with actual time to spare. Unless, for once, I am ahead of the rush, but I doubt it. So I don't have to hustle in the fabric section like I have in other years. A few years ago, I had a run-in with a granny over the last packet of elastics. I'll admit now, it wasn't my finest moment, but I was totally there first. I meander about with one eye open for the elf fabric and the other looking for something altogether different. I don't like my chances with Will Farrow, since it was the last length of last year's print, so I'm resigned that I'll need to buy twice as much of the new fabric that needs to be both reasonably priced and color compatible with the plain t-shirts I've already purchased for tops. Best case scenario, I find enough elf on the light blue cotton to make a second pair of pants. Worst case, I've wasted last year's fabric, making it not a bargain at all, and the new fabric will be shit or expensive. And I have to go back to the shops again tomorrow for different colored t-shirts. I'm contemplating the merits of dragons with Santa hats. Their little wings and tails are adorable, and I'm considering making myself some pants out of this. When one of the store workers walks past with an armful of bolts, it feels like I've just won a golden ticket, because balanced precariously on the top is my bloody elf print. I'm so excited I want to dump the unruly fabric that's bundled in my arms, but I'm struck by the rare moment of control. It's a Christmas miracle. While I'm attempting to re-roll the couple of meters of fabric that I've unraveled, I temporarily lose sight of the worker behind some shelves of cotton, but I sort myself out, prop the hastily rolled bolt against the shelf, and rush around the corner to grab my prize. Someone else is reaching for my fabric. Time goes weird after that, like I'm in some film scene running in slow motion, arms pumping incrementally, my mouth open in a drawled out, "No." And then I crash back to reality and into the hottest guy I've ever seen. Baz, I need that fabric. Someone has just bodily pushed me out of the way and is mouth-breathing in my direction. I can smell the cider from where they're standing, grabbing on to the other end of the bolt. And if the literal body slam wasn't offensive enough, the cider from a meter away is the clincher. Fuck them if they think I'm going to let go now. I'm not in the mood to be pushed around, and I don't care if that makes me a Christmas Grinch. I raise one brutal eyebrow and turn to make my displeasure known, but I'm faced with that Ukrainian guy from So You Think You Can Dance, and my brain turns to mush instead. I attempt once again to fall back on a cutting remark, because that's a completely normal way to communicate with an attractive man, you know? And because not even those curls are enough to brush away the weight of expectation that I am trying to escape tonight. But I can't seem to find the right words. I say nothing and glare instead, and it gives me a moment to observe the man in front of me. He's not the dancer, obviously. This is Watford, not New York. And the man who spoke to me very definitely had an English accent. He is a few inches shorter than me, quite a lot broader, and his fair hair is a chaos of dark auburn hues and frizzy curls. Blue eyes stare back at me, distrustful and a little wild. He looks like he's starving for something. He's stunning. I keep a firm grasp on the fabric and say, "I had it first." I don't usually resort to childish retorts, and I expect him to call me out for behaving like a first grader. I would have called him out, but he is literally pulling his hair out, and what he says instead is, "Fuck, please, I'm desperate." I raise an eyebrow suggestively and smirk. Simon. Oh, fuck. I can't believe I just said that. Bury me alive and kill me dead. I can't believe I said, "Fuck, please, I'm desperate," to a hot guy in a fabric store. Baz, did you just proposition me in Hobbycraft? He's gone an obscene shade of red, and those wild eyes are darting everywhere but at me. I didn't proposition you at all. He's a hot mess, and I can't not give him shit. On the contrary. Oh, sod off. You know exactly what I want. I open my mouth, but he cuts me off before I can have any more fun. I need that fabric, please. He looks like he's causing him physical discomfort to get the words out. There's a vein stress pulsing beneath his right eye, and below it are three little moles on his right cheek. They're both still holding on to the bolt, and I look down now to see what it is we're even arguing about. Buddy the Elf? I ask incredulously. Yes. How old are you? Elf is a great movie. If you like grown men in green leggings. Will Ferrell has excellent thighs. I pause, because he has a point, and also because the tone of this exchange has just shifted. He gives the bolt an experimental tug, but I hold on out of principle, or curiosity, or he actually has moles everywhere, and I'm getting a little lost in them. Perhaps a lack of self-preservation? Why are you holding this if you didn't even know what it was? He asked through narrowed eyes, interrupting my distraction. You plotting something? I'm not plotting anything, you fool. And I wasn't holding it. I was touching it, and then my fingers closed around it reflexively in response to you body slamming me. A beat passes, and he stares at me open-mouthed, then with a grin. That's what you said last night. Touché. I roll my eyes in an attempt to mask the flare of heat that I can feel across my cheekbones, and hope that my dark skin is enough to hide the blush. Two can play at this game of innuendo, though, and it's my volley. Okay, fine, I say, pushing the fabric towards him but still not letting go. Since you're so desperate for my bolts, he chokes. But still, he's still smiling with his whole face, so I carry on. I'll let you have it, but I won't give it up without knowing two things. He's turned his body towards me and is leaning one hip against the shelving now, eyes glinting under the floral lights of the store. What do you want to know? I want to know what you're making with this ridiculous print. Pajamas. Two pairs. I never measure, and I underestimated how much fabric I'd need. He cuts me off before I can finish. And I couldn't possibly hand over my bolts without first knowing your name. He licks his lips and says, "My name's Simon." He looks at me with such intensity that I feel flayed open beneath his gaze. A deep crack begins to interrupt the integrity of my long-held protective walls. Simon. He extends his spare hand and I take it. Bass, I reply. His palm is warm and calloused, and the way his fingers wrap around my hand leaves me feeling nowhere near as cool as I hope I look. Bass, he repeats, relinquishing all tension on the wad of fabric between us, but not letting go of my hand. He looks directly into my eyes and says seriously, "I am desperate for your bolts, but I will not take it under duress. Would you do me the honor of giving it up for me so that I can go home and make some sweet, sweet Christmas magic? You're a nightmare. I crack up and shove the bolt into his chest. Then he holds it close with an exaggerated swoon. The movement reminds me of Jude Law and the pool cue in Elfie, and all remaining defenses crumble. I wasn't planning on going home for a couple hours anyway, so I take a chance. Can I buy you a drink? I ask. Now? Yes? He looks a little panicked. Or not. No, forget it. I turn and walk away, embarrassed and feeling horribly exposed. Wait, Baz. I almost don't turn back. But there's something about the way he says my name that overrides my better judgment. He's pulled out his phone and is squinting at the screen, nostrils flailing, like he has a problem with what he sees. I'd love a drink with you. I'm on a bit of a deadline is all. He shoves his phone back in his pocket and the fabric under his arm, and I notice his joggers are wet over one hip. He doesn't seem bothered by it. And I think he might be a bit of a disaster. Fuck it, he says. Buddy can wait. But it's my shout. I did body slam and then proposition you in a fabric store after all. The least I can do is buy you a drink. I can't argue with that. Author's notes. I love dopamine. Dopamine loves comments. Let me know what you think. X. Reader's notes. Thanks again to Rainbow for having blanket permission for Podvic. I recorded this for you as part of Voice Steam 2025. I hope you enjoyed.